Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, you're listening to Transforming Trauma. I'm Eve, and this month I'm speaking with a cisgender male friend named Chris, who offered to share what he's learned over the years being intimate with a survivor. Tonight, we're going to be talking about sex and trust. So as survivors, many of you who are listening know that we have complex feelings associated with our traumas, and it can interfere with comfort, pleasure, satisfaction, and sometimes those feelings can be riddled with guilt or shame, fear, confusion, anger. Control can be a really major issue in relation to this, whether we're inhibited, compulsive, avoidant, because of the issues around trust, and we might worry about who's in charge or how much power they have and if and when they're going to use that against us. We might decide it's safer to just, you know, be sexual with ourselves, or perhaps not at all, depending on who we are and where we're at. If we do have sexual partners, sometimes we find that we can't be emotionally close to anyone that we're sexual with, and we can't be sexual with anyone we're emotionally intimate with. In maybe longer-term relationships, a partner might feel like family, and that association can really sometimes kill sexual desire when there might have been that in the past. So we experience a split between who we're sexual with and who we're emotionally intimate with. Other unconscious associations for survivors can affect our sexuality and take it in a particular direction. For example, some survivors have a series of relationships with people who are married or otherwise in committed relationships. And this can obviously create a repetition of a triangle, or repetition of the secrecy, not dissimilar from perhaps what we've experienced in the past. 99% of the time, a repetition of such injury actually can, though drive us, also help to master kind of the trauma of the past. So as survivors, most of us at some point live with triggers or flashbacks or compulsive masturbation or sexual desire, disgust at our own fantasies, confusion about our preferences. Sometimes there's dissociation during sex, hatred of our bodies, terror of pregnancy, or any number of sexual issues. Sometimes we feel sad or used after sex or guilty. We may be convinced that we don't deserve sexual pleasure, or we may be unable to feel sexual pleasure. For those listeners who have experienced child sexual abuse, this can affect every area of sexuality, body perception, reproduction, sexual functioning. So we're going to talk about this, and we'll see what comes up in the conversation and see what might be helpful in healing. Chris, thanks for being with us today. I know that your perspective is unique and going to bring some healing and hope and some ideas for survivors and their allies who might not know what's possible. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Chris, what was it like for you when you learned a new partner had been through some kind of trauma, and how did it feel? How did you respond?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I feel like generally these things often, at least in my experience, have been sort of fairly obvious, or I've tended to been with people who have been kind of open and upfront with their trauma. So I've sort of, I guess, known, I've been lucky to know going in, obviously, that they were a survivor. It's always interesting because I think most of us who don't have direct experience with trauma, when we hear these things, you know, it's very emotional. It brings up a lot of kind of issues or a lot of things that we kind of think about or associate categories, things like that. And so, you know, it's always interesting when you are with somebody and understand they have this complex thing that they're dealing with, to kind of take that without kind of preconceived notions of what's actually bothering them or what's on their mind or how they act. So, you know, so for me, in my experience, it's been an exercise in learning about myself and about a partner, and it's had a lot to do with learning about patience and kind of the nature of, you know, my own insecurities and my own feelings. You know, when somebody has a complex reaction, even to me.
That's really interesting. I never really thought about it from that angle. I'm interested, especially in what you were saying about how you learned about yourself through being with partners who have experienced trauma, and also intrigued or curious if it's been hard to kind of find the words sometimes because, like you said, maybe you didn't have direct experience, so perhaps it, you know, raised, I don't know, it's like a lot of times people have no idea what to say, so it seems like you're someone who maybe feels comfortable in hearing difficult things, aren't, I think a lot of people are so afraid they're going to scare someone away or who knows. Like, did you experience any fear around what to say or what to do, what not to do?
Well, fear is an interesting word, I suppose. I don't know. I'm not sure if I would necessarily call it fear, although I guess this may take the form of anxiety for a lot of people. So, for example, in my experience in the past, you know, not even talking about trauma necessarily, but, you know, let's say you meet somebody who has, let's say, some terminal disease or, let's say, cancer or something. I think it can at first feel a bit awkward because you don't know what you should say. You don't know to what degree you should or should not talk about this thing. In my experience, it's been very important to just kind of be open the strategy I've taken has been to sort of try to indicate to this person that I'm very open, very willing to talk, and that I am capable of doing that without, you know, while putting my emotions aside or being mindful of them. I think it's very important to show somebody that they can be open with you and that they can talk to you about these things without you, you know, maybe trying to solve it, which is a natural, trying to, you know, solve a problem, which is a natural reaction I think a lot of guys in particular may have, or without feeling, you know, like you're, without having expectations of their emotions and how they should be feeling in this moment. And, you know, it's tough. Often these things come up and then it's just a bit awkward just because neither of you are quite sure what to do. I'm sure it's hard from a you know, survivor's point of view, it must be very emotional to bring these things up and share them.
Yeah, definitely. You can say that again, and I'm really touched by what you're saying. I wish that more people had that perspective, because it is incredibly difficult to bring up, and as you sort of just alluded to, it's unpredictable, and that's one of the hardest parts. I think survivors, it can take years to even understand what's happening. So perhaps a partner might actually be able to communicate something that they don't even have awareness around. So it really does take good communication, and pretty interesting that you're able to sort of contain your own emotions and be able to separate them from, oh, this person needs some kind of attention from me. I need to, you know, put whatever anxiety is coming up for me and kind of focus on what's happening, because it seems important to attend to. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think that when you are in a situation where somebody starts feeling a certain way and it becomes obvious to you, you know, you have to keep in mind it may not be obvious to them. You know, often in my past, I've been with somebody who had had a reaction, and in the moment, I could tell that they were really anxious, and I wasn't sure how aware of it they were. And my natural reaction, of course, is to feel, you know, insecure and like, you know, maybe this is because of something I did, or maybe I should be doing something differently. But, you know, at the end of the day, you just have to keep in mind that this is an experience they're dealing with. And, and I think communication is really important. One strategy I've always taken is if I sense something wrong, whether or not I think it's real or imagined, I just bring it up. I talk about it. I ask, because I think that's the only real way to kind of get onto an even footing with somebody, to try to understand them. Like, you're learning about them, I'm learning about them, but also them understanding themselves and kind of helping them to become aware of, you know, the times in which they're triggered, what things trigger them, or something like this.
Sounds like a lot of work you've been doing. So you've been learning about these experiences or through them. How would you say that they've changed the way that you think about consent and sex in particular?
Sure. Well, I think one thing that's extremely important always to be keeping in mind with sex in general, not even in terms of trauma, but you know, things can change at any time for any reason without somebody even being aware of why. And, you know, I think it's just important to be very aware of how somebody's reacting, especially how their body is reacting. I think sometimes it's kind of obvious in somebody's actions, even if what they're saying doesn't necessarily match up. So, you know, I think consent is something that, even when spoken, is not necessarily complete. It's always a complex thing. And I just think it's good to be cautious and to have communication. And again, you know, with time you build trust. And, you know, the ideal is it gets to the point where if things just start to feel wrong, then you stop and you talk, and it's okay. And it's okay to do that. It's done in a way that's, you know, in the context of still, you know, fun and acceptance, and in a positive spin, you know. I think it's often very easy to get wrapped up into the negative aspects of these conversations a lot, but it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think I've heard of this phrase, enthusiastic consent, and I feel like what you just shared is a whole other layer of that. It's what's not spoken, and I guess when we talk about consent, a lot of times in the news, especially lately, it's more about, you know, silence is not consent, and you can't get consent if someone's intoxicated. Clearly, you can't get consent if you're a child, things of that nature. However, there is more than just what people are saying, and I love the idea that it is an ongoing conversation, and I like to remind other survivors that they can change their mind at any point, that they're never obligated to have sex just because they had it once or just because they told someone they wanted to. And I think this is really hard sometimes, even when people are in committed relationships, just to realize that they have the right, and that it's better for everyone if they can be in touch with their bodies and, you know, what they're comfortable with at that time. Because I think generally partners want that. They hopefully, if it's a good relationship, they want their partner to feel as best and comfortable as they can.
Right, exactly. And, I think that anytime that you have a situation where you want something and then something kind of prevents it or you can't have it right in the moment, well, you know, there's things that come along with that, but generally, I mean, you kind of trust that this is for the best, right? I mean, of course, if there's any question, I wouldn't want to be with somebody because, I mean, just in from a selfish perspective, it's going to make things complicated and hard for me. And of course, you know, caring about this person, you of course don't want to be doing something when it's questionable or when it just doesn't feel right. I think patience is just really important. I mean, we shouldn't always get what we want all the time. I mean, it's part of life. We have to be able to deal with that and, you know, treat people well.
Yeah, you're making me think of just, I think a lot of people have really good intentions even, and I feel like societally, I can't speak for all men or generalize, but it seems like in my experience and that of many people I care about, that young men and young boys aren't really socialized or taught about these things, and I feel like they lose out and they suffer a lot, especially when they commit violations or, you know, it's not always I'd say like conscious, or I think I don't want to say like not their fault, but it really isn't. I think our country and the world really struggles in this area in terms of understanding about restraint and boundaries and how to communicate and their own inability to give voice to what they need and want, and acting out on impulses and frustrations. I think just having a lack of language for people's internal experiences, it definitely affects people into their adulthood. So thanks for sharing about that. That was really new and interesting. And I was wondering what advice you have for people who are struggling as a partner, who are, you know, sexually intimate with somebody who has experienced trauma. What might you say to them?
Sure. So, you know, I mean, I guess it really depends, right? The dynamic is going to be vastly different depending on who people are, the nature of the relationship, the nature of the trauma, the perspectives of both people. I mean, I suppose it's hard to give general advice, but I suppose I would say that, I mean, the best thing you can really do is somebody who's with somebody who you know is struggling, is to really just practice your patience. I mean, it's a skill, you know? I mean, there are times you get frustrated, there are times when you know you don't do everything as best as you probably could, but, you know, if you were just constantly working on trying to make the other person feel accepted in that thing, you know, in showing them that they really can be comfortable with you, they really can trust you in a deeper way with things that are hard, despite short-term turbulence, short-term arguments or problems or a mismatch of emotion or action or something. I mean, you know, just practice, work on it. If you feel like things aren't going well and you can't figure out why, I mean, try different strategies of conversation. Try to maybe ask more questions about how they're feeling. I mean, often we don't really know why, and it takes a lot of work to come to a realization. It's an exercise of lining up with somebody else's thoughts, and those are very complex.
Yeah, I'm definitely hearing patience, and I wouldn't be Eve on Transforming Trauma if I didn't plug self-compassion, because I think that is the answer to much of suffering in the world. And with patience and the difficulty of these conversations, regardless of trauma, talking about sex and intimacy is challenging for everyone, I'd say. Having self-compassion so that when you do make a mistake, or just the patience part, you know, not getting your needs met sometimes, or feeling frustrated, then just being kind to yourself and knowing that it will get better and easier. It takes time. I think all relationships do, and this is just one layer that a lot of couples have to muddle through together. What would you say, or maybe you mentioned making mistakes and miscommunications. This can be messy. So how has that looked for you? And what, do you have any comments on that?
Sure. So, I mean, I think mistakes are inevitable. I think miscommunications are inevitable. And going back for a moment to your point on self-compassion, I mean, I think that's hugely important because I think often when mistakes are made, it's made from a point of strong emotion or frustration or, often things when you're dealing with things that are hard, things that cause tension, I mean, there's going to be a lot of mistakes. And
so, given that there's going to be a lot of mistakes, I feel like there's a lot of misperceptions, Chris, about like sex and trauma, and we sort of talked a little bit about it with consent. And is there anything that you feel like perhaps a lot of your friends or the public might think that, you know, that you feel like you've learned a new perspective on that you could kind of illuminate or dispel for people who might be buying into some of those stereotypes or generalizations that perhaps you've found aren't true?
Well, I would say that it's just more complicated than we ever think, really. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, the problem with not having experience with something is that your only exposure to it is kind of through the lens of categories. I mean, you know, think about it. I grew up in New Hampshire in Merrimack, New Hampshire. It was very non-diverse. And in my experience growing up, for example, I didn't have a lot of experience with diversity in terms of race or religion or even economics too much. And I just felt like when I finally started to meet more people of different backgrounds, it's kind of hard to break out of your own perspective. And often, because you don't know much about these things, really, from a directly personal way, you have only these ideas in your head that come from other sources. And, you know, in our culture, we have a lot of sources that are quite sensationalist. I mean, we have the media, for example. Think about how trauma is portrayed in the media. I mean, there's just so much stuff that they don't get into, that they can't get into, and you end up with these categories, and everything is framed through these kind of filters, right? I mean, you hear about trauma in situations that are just usually very kind of probably not average, very extreme or very violent. I mean, there's no sense of nuance or depth of depth of concern. So I don't know. I mean, I really think that the key thing is to understand that really you don't know much about it, and that really this is going to be a learning exercise for you. I mean, you're going to have to learn that these things, these reactions you have are, you know, they're valid in their own way, but they're just from an ignorant perspective, really. And the only way to improve that is to keep trying, you know, get into it, talk about it.
Thank you for saying that. I can't even begin to respond because there's so much going through my mind in the age of Trump and what it's been like for survivors to, I don't know, remain kind of sane in talking about these topics and reading the headlines. And it's really good to know that there are people like you who are willing to look deeper and to learn and be open. There's so much in what you just said, so thank you for bringing that to the conversation tonight. Is there something that don't know if you're going to keep in mind the people who you're talking about, but a message for survivors listening that would help them to help their partners better understand what they're experiencing? So if you were talking to survivors, what can they do to talk to their partners with more ease?
Sure. You know, I suppose that's kind of tough.
Or what do you want them to know? Like, they're having a hard time. They're feeling like, fuck, is this ever going to get easier? Like, I feel like he or she can't understand me. What can they do that would make it easier on someone like yourself?
Sure. I mean, well, I think one thing that's actually important to keep in mind is that there may be people that really don't have the tool set to be able to deal with all the things that come from these hard conversations. I mean, I can imagine a point in my past when I just wouldn't have been able to have this kind of perspective of nuance, right? I wouldn't have been able to get away from the things that I was constrained by in order to be more accepting. So, I mean, I guess one piece of advice is you need to look out for yourself. I mean, there may be relationships you're in where the other person really just won't, with reasonable effort from you, really be able to understand. I mean, you can't always assume that that's going to be possible. And I guess maybe trying to solve that is a very important thing. I don't know. What do you think about that?
It's definitely a complicated question. I think if people who are listening, and at least when I hear you say that, it's like, wow, that's going to eliminate a lot of potential partners because it's such a hard thing to understand. And like you've described so eloquently, it requires a lot of patience and care and openness, acknowledgement that you don't know, you don't relate perhaps. And I think it is important to be selective. And I can think of people I've worked with and friends, and it's just so key to value your safety and comfort and know that you're worthy. I've said that to a friend recently who was struggling in a dating experience, and I said, you are worthy of patience. We are worthy of patience. And it was just like so important for her to hear, because when you're triggered or not feeling supported in any relationship, especially sexually, it feels like you just want to shut down, and it's so easy to just revert into these horrible spirals of blame and shame and isolation. Like, I'm not good enough, or I'm broken. And
right.
I think this conversation is so important, because I feel like underneath everything you're saying is sort of the message that survivors deserve good sexual experiences and they deserve partners who want to give that to them and share that with them and build it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think one thing that's important for non-survivors to understand is that, I mean, people who have been through these things still have, I mean, they're still people, right? They still have a sexual desire. I mean, they still have a whole sexual life. You know, think about other kinds of trauma. Think about, like, soldiers with PTSD. You know, they come back and they deal with all these things, but they're still people. They still need to socialize. They still need to meet people. I think with trauma, it's the same way. I think, you know, it's really important for everybody to understand that really they're trying to have a normal life. You know, they want good
yes,
sex.
We are beyond normal, Chris. I'm shooting for extraordinary.
That's right.
I think
you want an extraordinary life.
Normal is overrated.
That's right. So you want extraordinary sex. Even it's not about not wanting something or not being able to get it. It's just about being honest about the problems that are there. And you know, really, I hope that everybody out there can really find a way to really listen to I don't know, be more open to other people's, be more open to hard problems in relationships. I mean, you know, don't be afraid to get into it. Don't be afraid to spend time diving into it, even if it's very uncomfortable. I mean, to get past something, you have to put work in, and work involves discomfort and learning and growth, and that's always going to feel bad in many ways. And
yes. Yeah, you must have listened to last month's talk, how we need bravery and courage for these difficult conversations, but they're totally worth it with the people we care about. So just to come full circle as we wrap up the conversation today, Transforming Trauma, the name of this podcast, just a few words. What would you say off the top of your head that this title means to you when you hear those words?
Sure. So from my point of view, I think it's about transforming perspectives. It's about getting away from this concept of blame. I mean, you know, I feel like if we're going to really transform how trauma is dealt with, then we need to transform the stereotypes around it, the paradigms around it, the way people kind of really think of it at the core. I think that it's very complicated. I mean, this intersects with just so many other big issues in our society. I mean, it intersects with economics and race and gender and all sorts of things. So, I don't know. I guess transforming trauma, transform ourselves, you know, be open, be learning, engage in things that are uncomfortable. And
I love it. It's not an answer I've thought of before, heard on the show. I think you're talking about a revolution and totally changing the way we talk about and think about and experience trauma and transforming it, transcending it, and beyond surviving. I heard my boss, Rachel Grant, recently say, I don't want to be a survivor. I want to be beyond surviving. And I feel like the vision that you just described is really the essence of what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I hope that everybody out there understands that, you know, everybody's changing all the time. We're all changing all the time. I mean, the things you're dealing with now, keep working at them. You know, things will change. They will get better. You will get to a better place if you keep working at it.
Well, thank you, Chris. I'm going to wrap up today's show, but it was a pleasure to speak with you, and look forward to continuing the conversation.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So before I sign off for the evening, I just want to put a plug in for Beyond Surviving podcast, rachelgrantcoaching.com. And also, to keep your eyes peeled, we're going to be doing a social media campaign. So if you can share a picture of yourself as a child or a young person, and perhaps write a caption or some kind of affirmation. An example would be, I imagine this was the moment I learned to love myself, or I learned that I could fly. Something that speaks to you. I saw another post that made me think of this idea, something like a prayer. May she always feel safe. May she always be guided like this. May she always be this sure of herself. May she always be this curious. May she always be clear about what she wants. May she always be this loved. Something of that nature, and I'd love to see your pictures. I know that meditating or thinking about myself as a child has been a very healing thing, and I've actually used practices like this to use with perpetrators and thinking about the fact that they are children, they were once children, and sort of thinking more about what conditions they grew up in. And it can be challenging and painful, but it's been a healing process for me. So an invitation for you all. Thank you for listening, and look forward to next month's Transforming Trauma. Take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.